Good afternoon. You're listening to Praxis here on KYRS, Thinner Community Radio. I'm your host, Taylor, and today's show consists of a couple things, all pre-recorded. So if you're looking forward to calling me live in the studio, I'm not here. But it is Memorial Day, and for a long time, I wanted to do a follow-up with some of the folks from Western States Center about their work countering white nationalism. It's always a topic in our region and in our nation right now, unfortunately. So I'm going to share this interview that I recorded this past Thursday with Lindsay Schubner. She is the director of the Momentum Program with Western State Center. She'll talk some more about that. We'll talk about some specific examples here at home of the ways that this ideology is attempting to creep into our political system and our institutions. And then toward the end of the show, I'll give some news updates relevant to what she and I talked about, and then do a bit of a memorial at the end, since it is Memorial Day. So stay tuned for all of that. And without further ado, I will kick off that interview with Lindsay. If there's anything, any questions you have about the show, you can find the full show, along with notes, articles that we reference, and way more online, anywhere that you get your podcasts. You can find all those links at kyrs.org/show/praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S. Here is that interview. All right. Well, hi. Welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me. Can you start by just introducing yourself, who you are, where you're from, what you do?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show. So my name is Lindsay Schubiner, and I am the program director for Momentum, which is a program at Western States Center focused on countering white nationalism. In our region, for Western States Center, the Pacific Northwest and Mountain States, and also nationally. So Western States Center is a regional organization based in the Pacific Northwest and Mountain States that works nationwide to strengthen inclusive democracy. And we work around four pillars: building movement, developing leaders, shifting culture, and defending democracy. And of course, the work countering white nationalism draws on all of those pillars, but is really rooted in defending democracy. And I come to this work from a number of years of focusing on organizing and advocacy against organized bigotry. In a previous position, I focused on working against the organized anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim movements in the United States, and have also done a bunch of local organizing, worked for a couple of members of Congress at the federal level. And so bring all of those experiences to Western States Center. And the Momentum Program, Countering White Nationalism, what really focuses on partnering with and supporting local communities that are facing the threat of organized white nationalism in their communities. And we look to provide research and strategic advice and guidance and support and tools to help those communities better push back and speak out for their community's values, whatever those are, in opposition to white nationalism and the harm that it can cause.
Awesome. And we can dive more into that in a second. I just want to mention for listeners that back in October, I talked with Kate Bitz, who was then a fellow at Western States Center, and we did some deep dives on countering white nationalism also. So if Lindsay and I gloss over anything today, that might be a good like prerequisite or bonus after interview listen. And I also talked with Dr. Joan Braun about fascism. So if we're talking about things related to fascism and skimming past, there's more homework. So that's just a shout out to both of them also.
Fantastic.
But I guess just as a review, if folks don't have 2 extra hours to go do that, can you give just kind of what the working definition that you all at Western States Center use when you're talking about white nationalism, especially as compared to white supremacy or racism?
Absolutely. when we talk about white nationalism, we're talking about a social movement that has the end goal of creating an all-white ethno-state, a separate white nation within the United States. And that's different from white supremacy, because white supremacy is institutionalized, right? It's not necessarily a social movement that we're talking about. White supremacy is really, in many ways, the foundation of the United States, right? This country was founded on slavery and genocide against indigenous peoples. And so white supremacy is baked into the systems and structures institutionally. White nationalism is different because it has a different history. After the civil rights movement, folks who were interested in, were sort of previously interested in supporting white supremacy, they didn't lose those beliefs, but they had to come up with a different strategy and a different explanation for why the civil rights movement was so successful.
But I think it's exactly what you said, that it's a social movement and also a political movement as opposed to like a personal ideology, right?
Right. So white nationalists are invested in building political power, and they certainly trade in bigotry and in hate, but they also organize the bigotry that already exists in society and use it to build political power towards their goals.
Yeah, and so I think when people hear about this, increasingly maybe they're seeing traces of this in our society. But I think sometimes average folks who are engaged in politics in a more casual way think that maybe folks are being hysterical or overreacting talking about this. Can you talk about some of the ways that this movement, that white nationalism has reared its head in our region in the last 2 to 5 years?
That's a really good question. And I think actually there are some really recent examples in Spokane and North Idaho that have been very much at issue in the past month or two that I think show how dangerous this movement is. And, you know, that's talking about white nationalism and its sort of political allies within anti-government militia movements, within the Patriot movement. And one example I would point to is State Representative Matt Shea, who it recently came out that he participated in a private group chat in 2017 in which members threatened violence, intimidation, and surveillance against their political opponents. Near the end of last year, it also came out that Shea had written a document called The Biblical Basis for War and distributed it. And it's a really disturbing document that chillingly prescribes for enemies who flout biblical law. It says if they do not yield, kill all males. And both of these things that Matt Shea has participated in, I think, are deeply tied to white nationalist or alt-right ideology that has a significant impact on the politics, you know, both of this region and also of the country. That private group chat that Matt Shea participated in, we learned in April that the chat was entitled White Movement in Russian, which is a reference to the anti-Semitic white army of early 20th century Russia. And that's, I think a pretty clear tie between white nationalist and alt-right ideology, along with some of the other ideologies that have had influence in the region over history, like Christian identity, and that's tied to the kind of politics that are possible locally. If we're operating in a situation where there's such a serious call to political violence, and Matt Che is only one example. There are plenty of other groups that use that are part of the alt-right or white nationalist movement and trade significantly in political violence against their opponents, such as Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys. That has a significant impact on all of us who want to organize to build the kind of inclusive, vibrant, democratic communities where everyone is free to live their lives how they want. That it makes a difference in terms of the organizing that that we can do and that other people feel safe to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say that, as someone who's been involved in different ways in progressive activism and organizing and amplifying people working counter to this, it was pretty chilling to read those chats, even though I've long known, that these folks are around because they were so graphic and also so inaccurate. And I think that's something we really need to hammer home, because, you're accurately analyzing and looking at the ideology that these people are putting forth. Meanwhile, they are painting with very broad strokes and characterizing anyone they don't like as, violent communist, which even if the groups were communist groups, which, like, really Spokane, Washington is not a hotbed of communist groups. I hate to break it to anyone out there. But even if they were, that's not a justification. But I don't know. I guess you see sort of the hysteria of the worldview that's being put forth. And when it's coupled with violence like that, it's alarming. So I'm glad that we're talking about organizing against it and getting really clear on what is going on.
Absolutely. And I think it's a really important point that you raise, that when we do talk about white nationalists and alt-right organizing, it's really important to be specific and talk about the specific ideologies that are being promoted, the statements that members of those groups have made, and the specific impacts that causes, rather than, on our side making the same mistake of painting with a broad brush. Because I think these movements are dangerous enough. We need to be really, really clear and really specific and detailed about in our analysis and in our understanding of what their politics are.
Mm-hmm. And I guess on that, keeping with the example of Matt Che, since that's a specific person we can point to with a really rich history, for better or worse, he's been reelected either 4 or 5 times in Spokane Valley, despite some of this being fairly public. What's your thought on that, on his kind of enduring ability to be elected while having these radical views? What about it is compelling to folks, to average folks who might be voting for him?
I certainly think it's disappointing that he has been reelected so many times. And I think that part of it is, maybe a disbelief in some of the more extreme things that he's promoting, because really, how could that be true? Who would really write something that says, if they do not yield, kill all males, right? And so I wonder if some of that is potentially going on. And I think, probably the more important aspect of this is that Matt Che, like many other extremists that are part of the alt-right, in most of his public statements, appeal to shared values and shared priorities for the people that they're speaking to, whether that's gun rights or anti-immigrant bigotry and fear, or whether it's, you know, as some white nationalist groups that operate in online spaces do, you know, whether that's computer games or memes and jokes that they use to appeal to people. But most white nationalists and members of alt-right groups don't come out in terms of their recruitment efforts and trying to gain support with the most extreme versions of their views. Mm-hmm. And so if there are folks in Matt Shea's district who have who maybe heard him speak directly and he sounded reasonable, that may be something that moves people to continue their support. But mm-hmm. I think what's more important than talking about that is talking about the organizing efforts that have been happening. And I think there has been some support clearly peeling away from Representative Shea as these things have come out. Mm-hmm. And so that's heartening to see. And I think it's really important to keep organizing, right? As you mentioned, Matt Shea's been in office for about a decade. And that's a significant amount of political power. And it's not, you know, a campaign to look for accountability for his pretty terrible statements and actions is not necessarily something that's always going to happen quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to look at some of the calls for accountability that have already happened.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and there is right now. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say here in Spokane, Spokane County, there have been some really great strides, partially because of the extremism of some members. I think the Republican Party nationally, but definitely visibly locally, is really at a crossroads, and the leaders there are really being forced to confront this element and say, is this mm-hmm. who we want to be, or do we want to find a way to get these people out of our conservative movement, whatever it is it means to those folks who don't want to affiliate with the alt-right.
Absolutely. And there's a great example from last year in Spokane, when Cecily Wright, the Spokane County GOP chair, was forced to resign after she publicly praised white nationalist James Alsup in a meeting. And after that, the Spokane County GOP publicly made some pretty good statements, I think, denouncing white supremacy and bigotry. So I think there's movement, and I'm also heartened that, you know, there are moderate Republicans who have been speaking out and saying this is not something that we support.
Mm-hmm.
There's also an ongoing investigation of Representative Shea in the Washington legislature. And that's something that I think is really important to pay attention to, and to make sure that the folks in charge of that investigation know that we're paying attention to, and sort of not let up the attention and the concern about the impacts of Matt Shea's actions.
Mm-hmm.
On the district, and honestly, I think it has much broader impacts than that as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And really, I mean, if you think about it for even a moment, it's truly not a party issue. The issue of white nationalism attempting to gain a foothold in our political system. There's obviously more support in some quarters than in others, but the passivity of folks who want to remain neutral in the face of that is just as bad in some ways, and it's really something that everyone should be responsible for. So that's all great to hear.
Absolutely. Yeah, we need people speaking out against white nationalism from all quarters, from all parties. You know, everyone who believes in a pluralistic, democratic nation where people have the freedom to be themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking on the phone with Lindsay Schubner. We're pre-recording the show earlier in the week here at the KYRS studio. Lindsay is the Momentum Program Director at Western State Center. I'll put links to Western State Center's work and any articles and things like that that we reference in the notes for the podcast. So, Lindsay, you were just saying, and I think it's a great transition, that there's implications about politicians like this gaining power in our political system that are broader than our region. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that.
Absolutely. I think the Pacific Northwest, and in particular, Eastern Washington, North Idaho, Montana, this is a location that has national relevance that often isn't recognized. I'm sure you and many listeners are familiar with the Northwest Territorial Imperative that called for white nationalists to move to the region and use that to gain a foothold and gain control over that geographic location to further their goals of having an all-white ethnostate. And so that movement continues to have reverberations in the existing politics of the area, continues to have adherents, and I think this region has the potential to significantly incubate the white nationalist movement, to serve as a place for white nationalists to take control of institutions and really gain political power. You may have seen that about a month ago, I think, the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee passed a resolution urging the federal government to reinstate travel privileges to the United States for Martin Selner, an Austrian identitarian white nationalist. And I think that's a sign that committee has had white nationalists gain significant power within it. And that's a real danger, and that's something that everyone in the United States should be paying attention to. And it's a reason to throw a ton of support behind the local organizers who are pushing back and speaking out, often successfully. And it's also international. I mentioned this example with the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee. And of course, Martin Selner is Austrian. He's a major figure in the European identitarian movement, and he's under investigation right now because he received a significant donation from the Christchurch mosque shooter who killed 51 people in New Zealand in March. And it turned out he also communicated directly with the shooter and offered to meet with him. So this is really a movement that is not just in the region, it's national, it's international, but the region that includes Spokane is really important, and that's why local effort to push back and to maintain values that are democratic and inclusive at the center of local politics and local institutions are so crucial.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering because this show's really kind of hoping to highlight activism that folks do on a deeper level, but also to encourage everyone to be a little more involved in ways that they can. And with this topic, I think sometimes it's hard because as you learn about it, I believe Kate said when we did our interview that you can start to see a white nationalist, a white supremacist around every corner and in every statement. Mm-hmm. And I know I've probably been guilty of that myself, but at the same time, and also it can be really easy. You know, I'm very impressed, and I hope that your research folks there get great support in their lives, because it's really dark world to enter into to do the work of following these movements. And I wonder how average people can be a little more aware. Are there certain things people can look and watch for and ask about during election season, for instance, or with current elected officials?
Mm-hmm. You're right. It can be really dark work. I want to address that first. But for me, it's also really powerful and inspiring work, because even though I think the perception on a national level is that, you know, things are getting worse and worse, we're seeing these fantastic local victories where people really come together and mobilize and make progress. And that's, I think, a really good reason to get involved, and for people to bring this up with their local community organizations and, you know, push them to make a statement, because those things, especially when they're rooted in deeply shared values, I think can be incredibly meaningful and powerful, and help people connect and build the kind of positive movement that is the best antidote to white nationalism. Is really standing in our values of democracy and inclusion and justice. In terms of the national political situation, and you know, you mentioned elections, I think one thing that I always keep in mind is that, you know, you said it can be easy to see white nationalists around every corner, and there's some positive data around that. There was a poll recently that found that Americans, if you ask them whether they agree with different far-right movements, they by and large don't agree with white nationalism. Only 4% of Americans said they agreed with white nationalists. 4% said they agreed with white supremacists. 6% said they agreed with the alt-right. So that's really good news. This is it is a relatively small portion of the country who's actively engaged in white nationalist and anti-democratic movements. But there's a much larger proportion of Americans who believe that who agree with core white nationalist ideas, just without the label. And that's also important to pay attention to. So for instance, 31% of Americans agree that America should protect and preserve its white European heritage. And 18% of Americans say it's at least somewhat important that a person be of European heritage or descent to be considered truly American. Those are much larger numbers. And I think as people are paying attention to political debates in this country and hearing from elected officials or candidates, it's really critical to be looking for some of those code words and dog whistles that maybe don't say white nationalism explicitly, but still are focused on maintaining a white demographic majority in the United States population, which is a key goal of the white nationalist movement. And that's where anti-immigrant policies tie in, anti-Muslim policies like the Muslim ban, or you know, other bigoted dog whistles that work to create a politics in which white nationalists can thrive and can recruit.
And there's so many things. I mean, doubling back, I really don't want to linger on him any longer, but I pulled up Matt Shea's website just as an example, and his language on the front page of his site is incredibly bland. You know, it's freedom, it's free enterprise, it's protecting rights, certain rights, obviously, but it's so innocuous. So I think really the responsibility is on people to really listen to the content. And if the content isn't there, to ask, you know, who does this person mean when they say real Americans? Or, you know, who does this person mean when they say criminals, and all of that? And try to find out, who do they mean? Because they mean someone specific, almost certainly.
Absolutely. That's in line too with what I was saying about their recruitment efforts, is they, you know, they don't lead with the most extreme things. And I think that's absolutely right, that it's critical to pay attention and ask questions and do background research.
Mm-hmm. And I want to switch gears a little bit, because one thing that the alt-right and that white nationalists, I think, have focused on, my impression is that they focused on this, correct me if I'm wrong, is recruiting young people, and specifically recruiting young men. And we've dealt with some of that here locally. There's been great organizing happening in some of the high schools where there have been increased hate incidents and attempted recruitment there. And Western States Center just came out with a toolkit. Would you mind sharing a little bit about that and talking to people about that, maybe especially parents who might be listening, or young people who might be listening?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, Western States Center, and thank you for bringing this up. We came out with a toolkit called Confronting White Nationalism in Schools, and it was written by two longtime educators in partnership with Western States Center. And they had really seen the need for something like this over their years of teaching, because this is not new. White nationalist groups have been active for decades, and often have targeted young people. In one example is from Andrew Anglin, who's the editor of the neo-Nazi website, The Daily Stormer, and who said explicitly that his website is mainly designed to target children. He said age 11 through teenage years. That's so incredibly young, and it's right when young people are looking to figure out their identities, looking for community, and looking to, you know, figure out what they think about the world. So we've heard of many instances of white nationalists and alt-right groups intentionally recruiting young people who are at the high school level or even middle school. And it's a community issue. It's something that parents need to be paying attention to, that schools need to be paying attention to, administrators, community members, everyone involved with young people should be looking for signs that a young person is getting involved in white nationalism. That's not to fearmonger, but be aware that, as you know, as we watch out for young people in other ways, this is an important aspect of it, and one where we didn't see an existing tool, even though there are so many great and important tools out there around diversity and inclusion and equity in schools. And creating those kinds of schools is an important part of strengthening them against the influence of white nationalism. We created this toolkit to provide specific scenarios and specific actions that many of the different people involved in the school communities can take when something happens, like a young person starts citing white nationalist sources in their school papers or using white nationalist insignia or signs of alt-right groups.
Something that has been brought up in the past that I think I remember reading about is that it's not dissimilar to like gang intervention in schools, which certain schools do have experience in, but it's also not the same. So there's some real differences that I think you all highlighted in the toolkit. And I know I've already shared it with like four or five different school districts that I know in the course of just talking with folks lately. So it's really great that it's been created and organized like that.
That's really great to hear. Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that schools can do with their existing resources and existing policies. And the work that schools that many schools have already done to make sure that that they're fostering a learning environment for all students. Mm-hmm. It's really about building on that and recognizing when this becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've just got a few minutes, and I guess if we can just distill some of what we've talked about into those things that people can do. I know we've mentioned some of them, but if you had just like a top, like if you want to get started this week, how can you get started in helping in this movement of combating white nationalism?
The first thing I would say people can do is make a call. The Republican minority leader in the Washington House of Representatives is J.T. Wilcox. And he is doing an investigation of Representative Shea. And we have called on people to pick up the phone and give Representative Wilcox a call and tell him how seriously you think this investigation needs to be taken and that you want to see consequences for Representative Shea's actions and their impact on the community. So call Representative Wilcox. His number is 360-786-7912. Ask him to denounce white nationalism, to denounce violence against and intimidation of political opponents, and to eject Representative Shea from the Republican caucus. Democrats in the Washington legislature have many of them have already spoken out. It's really important for Representative Shea's own party to also be clear on the values they support and the values they don't support. The second thing I would say is make a statement. Whatever institution or community you're part of already, work with them to speak out publicly to denounce white nationalism and speak out in support of democratic values. So if you're part of a PTA at your children's school, ask them what they're doing to ensure a safe learning environment and to protect kids from recruitment by white nationalists. If you're part of a religious community, work with them to make a formal statement, and similarly if you're part of a neighborhood group. And then the third thing I would say is connect with local organizers. There are some great organizers in Spokane, in Washington State as a whole, in North Idaho, who are speaking out and strategizing. Connect with them and keep the pressure on white nationalist and alt-right groups that are trying to gain political power. Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane is a great place to go. There are organizations in Idaho as well, and there are moderate Republicans organizing and speaking out. So wherever your community is, get looped in and make your voice heard. I think that's how we're going to make things change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll just wrap up by asking you something I try to ask everyone who comes on the show. What is keeping you going in doing this work, which can be so notoriously burnout inducing. What keeps you going and what gives you hope in doing this kind of work?
What gives me hope is dedicated community organizers who are building alternatives and who are supporting each other, even in the face of sometimes threats, sometimes intimidation, but who are coming together and speaking out in support of their own values and making it count, right? They're influencing their entire communities to come together in support of democratic values and the right of every person in the community to live free from fear. And I think that's really inspiring, and that's the kind of work that I'm really excited to be a part of.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for the work that you do throughout the region and for joining me on the show today.
Thanks so much, Taylor.
Awesome. And I'll include links for how to find out about Western State Center, all of that, everything we talked about on the notes for the podcast. All right, so welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that interview. Again, I recorded that just this past week with Lindsay Schubner, and all of the links to the articles we spoke about and more are online. Something that was very interesting, as you noticed, she and I talked about Representative Matt Shea as an example of these ideologies, an example of the alt-right in general kind of gaining a foothold. Right after we talked, there was a fundraiser for Shea's conceptual and proposed State of Liberty, at which many other elected officials were present. So I'm just going to read a little bit of the spokesman article about that, and then a follow-up that focuses on one of those specific elected officials in case you missed it. You know, it's very timely. It's very related to what she and I were talking about. So again, this is Chad Sokol's story in the Spokesman Review just from Friday, May 24th, the day after Lindsay and I recorded that interview. He says, a fundraising event for the proposed creation of a 51st state called Liberty started on a tense note Thursday evening as one-time loyalists of State Rep. Matt Shea held what they called a silent protest and stood toe-to-toe with armed security guards. The Liberty State Gala drew about 200 people to the Center Place Regional Event Center in Spokane Valley. Supporters of the new Christian conservative state, which would span parts of Washington and Oregon, as well as Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, raised money by auctioning pies and other desserts. The lineup of speakers included Shea, a Spokane Valley Republican who has championed the Liberty State movement, Spokane City Councilman Mike Fagan, Spokane City Council candidate Tim Benn, and Lauren Culp, the police chief in Republic, Washington, who made national headlines when he pledged not to enforce a controversial gun control initiative that voters passed in November. County prosecutor Larry Haskell, former treasurer Rob Chase, and gun activist Anthony Bosworth also were in attendance, as were Barry and Ann Bird, who lead the Marble County Fellowship in Northern Stevens County. In 1988, Barry Bird helped pen a Christian identity manifesto that referred to Jews as antichrists and condemned interracial marriage, though the Birds have since tried to distance themselves from racist ideology. At one point during her own speech Thursday, Shea's legislative assistant, Renee Holliday, said supporters of the 51st state idea were bound by a common sentiment. Quote, it's either going to be bloodshed or Liberty State. So again, that's not the full article, just a section that I wanted to share. I also wanted to share a portion from the following day's paper, Saturday, May 25th, also by Chad Sokol of the Spokesman Review, that focuses on City Councilman Mike Fagan, who in some ways flies under the radar, but is here in the city of Spokane, where we broadcast, also is involved in radio, and there's some interesting statements here that I think are useful to include after the discussion that Lindsay and I just had. So from that article, Spokane City Councilman Mike Fagan pumped his fist while leading his audience in an enthusiastic chant Thursday evening, seemingly offering full-throated support to a conservative secessionist movement that would turn Eastern Washington into a 51st state called Liberty. Liberty, Fagan shouted during the fundraising event, at the Center Place Regional Event Center in Spokane Valley, joined on stage by council candidate Tim Benn. "State," the crowd replied. But on Friday, Fagan, who is running for council president, said he's not necessarily a supporter of the Liberty State movement. In an interview, Fagan called the proposal an interesting idea and said he agrees that lawmakers in Olympia are out of touch with Eastern Washington. But he said he's more focused on City of Spokane issues and hasn't given much thought to splitting up the state. "I've just got way too many other things going on," he said. Fagan said he was invited to Thursday's fundraiser to run a dessert auction and later agreed to deliver a presentation with Benn. It was essentially an untaped episode of their AM radio show, Right Spokane Perspective. "We were only there to provide a bit of comic relief," Fagan said. One of his opening punchlines, he said, was cribbed from an internet meme that blamed immigrants for crimes and other social ills. Analyses of government data have found no indication that immigrants, including undocumented immigrants, cause crime rates to increase. And quick aside and quick trigger warning, re-graphic anti-immigrant language, continuing the quote from the story, quote, "Closing the southern border will create a shortage of infectious diseases, welfare fraud, meth, heroin, fentanyl, rapists, sex trafficking, murderers, home invasions, prayer rugs, MS-13, voter fraud, hate crimes," quote, Fagan told the audience, before striking a disappointed tone. Quote, "Oh my God, Tim, and avocados, dude," end quote. So, again, just wanted to share some sections of that. For folks who maybe don't follow local politics very closely, who hear and are concerned about what Lindsay and I were speaking about in the interview, just to know, like, very concrete and very right now, just this past week, things happening with elected officials here in Spokane and Spokane Valley. So again, the earlier part of her interview had a lot of ideas about what folks can do if they want to seek accountability and want to address the issue of being represented by people who feel comfortable saying things like that in public and in private, in the case of Shay. So just in closing, since it is Memorial Day, you know, traditionally a holiday memorializing veterans, soldiers, victims of war, I wanted to do a not at all exhaustive, but partial memorial of folks who, just in this country, who we have lost to white nationalist extremist violence in the years 2018 and 2019. It's actually rather hard to pinpoint, so I was pretty stringent in where I looked. The sources for this list are the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, and the New York Times did an extensive study on this as well. It does not include many other what you could lump in with extremist violence, fatalities, attacks on trans people, attacks by, you know, racially charged attacks by police on people of color. It does not include some of those categories because, as Lindsay said in the interview, sometimes we do need to be really specific about what is white nationalism, what is this white supremacist extremism, and it really, it does overlap with misogyny, with trans misogyny, with transphobia, with Islamophobia, with anti-Semitism. But just if you are listening to this list and you think that it sounds short, or you think that it sounds long, or you think that it sounds incomplete, I apologize, and just know it was an attempt to have a somewhat comprehensive list without, unfortunately, spending the whole hour listing names. So with that, I guess just join me in remembering these folks and, I guess, doubling down on a commitment to fight these violent ideologies wherever they may spring up and to help protect each other as we move forward. So from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, members of the Tree of Life Synagogue, Joyce Feinberg, 75, Richard Gottfried, 65, Rose Malinger, 97, Jerry Rabinowitz, 66, Cecil Rosenthal, 59, David Rosenthal, 54, Bernice Simon, 84, Sylvan Simon, 86, Daniel Stein, 71, Melvin Wax, 88, Irvin Younger, 69. from a Kroger in Jeffersontown, Kentucky, Maurice E. Stollard, 69, and Vicki Lee Jones, 67. From Santa Fe High School in Santa Fe, Texas, Jared Conard Black, 17, Shauna Fisher, 16, Christian Riley Garcia, 15, Aaron Kyle McLeod, 15, Glenda Ann Perkins, 64, Angelique Ramirez, 15, Sabika Sheik, 17, Christopher Stone, 17, Kimberly Vaughn, 14, Cynthia Tisdale, 63, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, Alyssa Alhadef, 14, Scott Beigel, 35, Martin Duquet, 14, Nicholas Dworet, 17, Aaron Feiss, 37, Jamie Gutenberg, 14, Chris Hickson, 49, Luke Hoyer, 15, Kara Lauren, 14, Gina Montalto, 14, Joaquin Oliver, 17, Elena Petty, 14, Meadow Pollock, 18, Helena Ramsey, 17, Alex Schachter, 14, Carmen Shentrup, 16, Peter Wang, 15. At a hot yoga studio in Tallahassee, Florida, Dr. Nancy Van Vessel, 61, Mara Binkley, 21. Stephen Morphis, 67, of Renton, Washington, Tulane Carmen Jr., 24, of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Charmaine Pack, 34, of Sumter, South Carolina, Michonne Cooper, 43, of Shawnee, Kansas, Eddie Coleman Heathco, 23, of Camden, Michigan, Blaze Bernstein, 19, of Orange County, California, and Lori Gilbert K, 60, of Poway, California. So thanks so much for listening on this Memorial Day. Try to do whatever you might do on a 3-day weekend. And also, I know it's a downer topic, but consider what you might be able to do, what Lindsay might have suggested, on how you can build a strong community that's resilient and, you know, as safe as we can be from these violent ideologies. So thank you for listening. I will be back live with a new show next week. As always, if you have any questions, suggestions, or anything else, you can email me at praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S @KYRS.org. You can also find links to the podcast, back shows, and way more at KYRS.org/show/praxis. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.